Thank you for joining your latest edition of your Triple Threat podcast. Jabari Davis back here with you, and I'm definitely happy to be joined by my guys, Jamison Wilson, Jordan Buscarini, for this edition. My bad for the delay between episodes as my summertime work schedule gets a bit more difficult, but it's always great to be back talking NBA and just hoops in general with these guys. Speaking of the summertime schedule, we look forward to catching up with folks like Pro Basketball Talk's Kurt Keelan, host of the Cruise Control podcast, Randy Cruz, Lane Green of Basketball Insiders, and a few more surprises this summer in order to catch up with all of the action and, I guess, transactions from the offseason. But let's go ahead and start today's conversation off with some to Tim Duncan's retirement. You know, it came totally true to form, I guess, in the most understated and quiet of ways. No tour, no fanfare, no frills, but full of respect and appreciation from his contemporaries and the truest fans, you know, just like his career. So just give me your guys' quick thoughts on Duncan, you know, as he walks, I guess, dribbles off into the sunset.
Well, I think of Tim Duncan, I think of a guy that was just so good for so long. He was, you know, he was the San Antonio Spurs. I mean, he got there when David Robinson was on the, you know, latter part of his career, actually, you know, extended David Robinson's career a little bit longer than it probably should have been. But he's a guy that if they're going to build a statue outside of AT&T Arena, it's going to be him. Like, he's going to have a statue out there one of these days, and if he wants it. He's a guy that was just the face of a franchise and played so well for so long on both ends. The game that holds a lot of respect and the game that sticks out is the game in the finals versus New Jersey. He had, like, 23 points, 20 boards. He almost had like a quadruple double in that game. Like, that game sticks out more than most. He just controlled the whole game without scoring, like, 40 or 50 points. He just controlled the game by doing pretty much everything. It was also really good on the glass as well. So, if you are bringing a big man up, if you're coaching a big coming up in this era and whatnot, he's the guy you have that kid watch tape of, because he did everything so well. He did everything, except for free throws, of course. But in terms of offensively, on the low block, he was very skillful. The jump, the bank shot was so skillful. Everything in the key was just perfect. Everything, that's what you want your big to do. And on defense, the defense was so underrated because, yes, he blocked shots, got rebounds, cleared the glass. But also, with that being said, he also played pick-and-roll defense very well. He showed and recovered, blew up pick-and-rolls, all those things that we ask for bigs to do these days. He did it way back when it wasn't getting hyped like it is now. He's the perfect big, I should say, if you're asking a model. You want a big to say, I want my big to do this. I want a model big. He's the guy I look at. And there's nothing more. I don't think there's a more perfect compliment to say about a guy than that, because if you have a Tim Duncan, you're in a good shape. And also being a Spurs, he pretty much is the face of that whole thing there, because he's the guy that, when he's been there, they won 60% of their games pretty much every year since he's been there. And that's just a whole lot. And he's made a lot of careers go based off his production. You got to give him a lot of credit for that.
Absolutely. And Jordan, as I come to you, just to list it off for you, a couple of things. Duncan's a five-time champion, two-time MVP, if I'm not mistaken, three times final MVP, 15-time All-Star. I mean, the list goes on and on. Whether you consider him a center or a power forward, other folks can have that debate. I think the thing that stands out to me, and as I transition to you, is the fact that, they faced, his teams faced the Lakers six times in the playoffs from 99 to 2008, and they essentially determined the NBA, title for, the better part of a decade. Where does he rank in your all-time big men, power rankings?
Ooh, that's close. That's tough. I consider Tim Duncan a power forward, first off. So it's easy for me, on my show earlier today, we talked about this, so it's easy for me to group him with Carmelo and Charles Barkley. I think you have the three greatest power forwards to ever play the game, Duncan, Malone, Barkley. What separates Duncan from Malone and from Barkley, who all had a certain skill set that worked for whichever team they played for. I mean, Malone, the greatest pick-and-roll power forward option that we have ever witnessed. Part of the reason why John Stockton is the all-time leader in assists. Part of the reason why Karl Malone is second on the scoring list. For me, Duncan, what separates him from the likes of Barkley and Malone is the fact that he won five NBA championships. Also, Tim Duncan, this is tricky to say this because a lot of people take this as a slight, and it's not a slight at all. Duncan was a system player in San Antonio. Now, what makes Duncan so interesting in San Antonio is the system was designed around his skill set. See, that's why things worked out in San Antonio. So when I say he's a system player, a lot of people take that as an insult. It's not an insult. Tim Duncan was very successful in San Antonio because of his lack of an ego, which a lot of players have. You know, a lot of people today are talking about Kobe or Duncan. Who's the better player from this generation? Duncan didn't have an ego. And that's a lot of the reason why he went to the playoffs 18 times in 19 years, because this San Antonio team meshed so well together. You know, he had the solid foundation of a Tony Parker and a Manu Ginobili around him for the better part of his career. That's why Tim Duncan was so successful. He was able to play the game and embrace a role. So in that regard, man, there's not too many other players, much less bigs, who have accepted a certain role that may have changed throughout the better part of 19 years at different times in his career and still found ways to adjust and be successful. The reason why he was able to adjust and be successful, again, lack of an ego and the fundamentals. He has every single fundamental that a big guy needs. In fact, I seen a stat today. It was kind of mind-boggling. He has nearly 600 more bank shot makes than the guy that's number two behind him in NBA history. Like, he perfected his craft on the bank shot. Everybody knows that. He averaged a double-double for his entire career. And when you look at where he ranks historically with some of the things that he has done in his career, for instance, he's 14th on the all-time scoring list. He's 6th on the all-time rebound list. He's 5th for blocked shots. He's 7th in games played. It's because he was able to embrace a particular role that had changed throughout his career. And that's how I'm going to remember Tim Duncan. So when we talk about that, I don't know if there's any players in league history that have found ways to adapt and evolve their game the way Tim Duncan managed over 19 years.
That is such an excellent point. And, you know, it leads me to exactly what I appreciate most from him. The fact, and both of you, I think, touched on this, the fact that he was an egoless star. The fact that he was specifically willing and able to not just play with multiple systems, because people don't realize while there was the consistency of Greg Popovich and that overall Spurs system, they transitioned from when he came in. Obviously, Jameson mentioned he was paired beside an aging David Robinson. They kind of had like a double post action. Then it was totally inside out, where everything was kind of centered around him, in those early 2000s and mid 2000s years. Then, as he continued to age, he transitioned, and the Spurs obviously kind of shifted their focus to more of the pace and space game, where it was a lot of three pointers, a lot of movement. I just really appreciate guys that not only are able to do it for so long, but also, as you mentioned, Jordan, adapt to the times. And do it without an ego. Do it without, having to, quote unquote, be the man. Or even though, let's be clear, Tim Duncan was a man on that team for the majority of his career, and that was very much evident. It just wasn't. It didn't need to be stated. So that's something that I appreciate. All right, the last I'm going to go is because it's been a part of the discussion, and we actually talked about it, the three of us, a little bit here before the show. You're going to go ahead any time you have, especially when there's, by such stark contrast in the same exact year, the way that Kobe Bryant went out, you're going to have the conversation of like, oh, well, whose era was it? And even though we talked about this in the past, I want to open it up again and just give you guys a quick moment to talk about that. I've been on record as saying that if you're talking about the level, a maintained level of consistency, I don't know that you can, that anybody's going to compare to Tim Duncan and the San Antonio Spurs over these last, 20 or 25 or however many, years. Tim Duncan was absolutely great. He was absolutely phenomenal. He's, I don't know in terms of ranking, if he's a top 5 or top 10 or top 20 or whatever the case may be, but I know that he's one of the greatest players that I've ever seen. All of that said, and while some people would prefer to have his career the way it was, to still be in competition, all the way down, toward the end, I still will say that Kobe Bryant was the more excellent of the players when I look at their heights. And the reason why I can say that is I watched both of their careers in their entirety. I was very blessed in that regard. I appreciate the contrast between their careers, but if I had to say which one was the absolute all-time greater player, I still say it would be Kobe Bryant. But for the record, for those Tim Duncan fans out there, that is not a slight in any way. It is just like I tell Kobe fans that when I say Michael Jordan was better than him, it's not a slight. It's when you're talking about all-time greats. So have at it, guys. What do you guys say about that comparison?
Well, first of all, I'm not a big comparison guy, only because, especially when you're talking about bigs, you're talking about a big to a small. I'm not a huge comparison guy because there's just so much involved in it really, you really don't get the best kind of context that you'd like. But my biggest thing is when you compare guys, I put it in their own different categories. I would say Kobe is probably higher on the guard or wing category than Duncan is on the big category. That's how I would say it. But I wouldn't have a problem, and I would understand if someone wanted to start their team with a big like Tim Duncan, because he's a guy that you can do so much with, and you can build a lot more easier than you can build with a shooting guard. So I would totally understand that. But I think Kobe's a better guard than Tim is the better big. Not by much, but I think that's what I would put it at. But, again, I'm not big for comparisons at all. I'm really not. And, again, when it comes to whose era was this or whose era was that, honestly, you can go so many different ways and so many different angles you want to go about it. I'm honestly one person to just say, you know what, I appreciate watching both these guys for 18, 19, 20 years. I'm mixing with a couple other guys that need to call quits too. Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Dirk Nowitzki, they need to join and have this maybe one of the best Hall of Fame class ever. It's not going to happen because guys are getting paid, and I understand that. But you know what? I think the comparisons, it's good for ratings, it's good for clicks and whatnot, but honestly, it's really unfair to compare both of them because they play two totally different positions. They were in two totally different situations. It would have been interesting, though, if as good as the Spurs were for so long during Duncan's era, they never won back-to-back rings. And even though they were consistent for 18, 19, all these years, they were so good. They're still good to this day. They're probably going to win another 55 to 60 games this upcoming season. They never won back-to-back years. And that's something that, even though they had more consistency, being at a certain height, being able to defend your crown, you know, a couple of times, that obviously that weighs when you're comparing careers and whatnot. But I would say Tim has the most consistent, you know, run, but Kobe and his team, like, obviously Tim and his Spurs had the more consistent run throughout the years, but I'd say Kobe had the higher height, I guess you could say, with especially going back-to-back when, you know, being part of a three-peat and whatnot. It's close, but I would, you know, it's a comparison that people are going to go through all the time. People have their preferences, and I get that. But, man, it's a sad day. That means we're getting a lot older. We all recognize, we all remember these guys' first games. I remember Tim Duncan in college. So it's a sad day when both of these guys now, it just reality sets in that you're getting a lot older than you realize.
Yeah, and this is a fun question. First off, who is more marketable? That's a no-brainer. You give the check to Kobe Bryant. Who could take over a game in an instance? That wasn't Duncan's game. Duncan was more fundamentally sound. Duncan was a guy that was going to break you down methodically. Kobe could go absolutely ballistic. Now, if you're going to ask 100 coaches who you'd rather coach, I'm going to say 90 of them would probably rather coach Tim Duncan. A lot of that has to go back to the fact that, you know, Duncan didn't have an ego. He would embrace a role. There's pros and cons to both of these guys. For me, it's the era of Kobe Bryant because, look, for every bit of love that Kobe Bryant has, he's equally hated. And that's a fact. I mean, going into this season, it was all, you know, thank you, Kobe, getting, you know, standing ovations in every arena he went into. Kobe was hated for, you know, 19 out of the 20 years of his NBA career, even as a rookie. People didn't like Kobe Bryant. That was never the case with Tim Duncan. Like, I've never talked to anybody who hates Tim Duncan. I have never heard anybody say that. And to me, that really goes a long way. You know how Kobe was talking about the hero-villain campaign? That goes a long way. That's how you know that it's your generation, when you were equally hated for everything that you have accomplished. Tim Duncan is as fantastic as he was, as great as he was. Again, it is no knock to be number two to Kobe Bryant in a generation because I think Kobe is a top two guard of all time. Tim Duncan is behind him. And another thing that really stands out to me, and again, this is not Tim Duncan's fault. In fact, this may be Kobe Bryant's fault to a certain extent. Kobe won titles with multiple cores, and that's difficult to do. You know, you look at a lot of the all-time greats, and Jameson bringing it up, how Tim Duncan never won back-to-back crowns. Kobe led, you know, multiple cores. And one of the biggest misconceptions when you look back on Kobe Bryant's career is that he rode the coattails of Shaq for three championships. Outside of that first NBA title, where the Lakers beat Indiana, is a legitimate argument to say that Kobe Bryant was the best player on the Laker team the year they went in and beat Philadelphia. He was phenomenal. And then you look at the three-peat year, Kobe was fantastic. I mean, you look at his numbers in the postseason, they were equal to Shaq. So, to me, to watch Kobe win multiple titles with different cores is something that really stands out to me. Kobe didn't have the benefit of having stability around him during the course of his career. A lot of that had to do because of Kobe. So, again, there's a couple of ways you could look at it. Like, if Kobe and Shaq had gotten along and they had been able to set their egos aside, that group right there, they may have won 8 championships. The fact is they won 5. I look at what the San Antonio Spurs did, and even though they were the pillar of consistency, they had multiple letdowns in the postseason, multiple letdowns. I remember a San Antonio team getting ousted as a 1 seed by the number 8 Memphis Grizzlies. There were disappointing seasons in San Antonio, and we forget that because they became, again, the pillar of consistency. They became the franchise that everybody wanted to be. It's a dream come true to have a coach like Greg Popovich with the surrounding core of Parker, Ginobili, and Duncan for over a decade. That may never happen again, especially with the way the NBA is rolling right now. First off, the only player that I see playing over 15 or 16 seasons with one team and retiring left is Dirk Nowitzki, and I don't know if we'll ever see this again. So mark it on your calendar, Kobe playing 20 years, Duncan playing 19 with one team, because we'll probably never see this again. But to have the level of consistency that Duncan had is something that really bodes in his favor, as to where I watched Kobe go through multiple rebuilding stages, and still he was one of the most exciting players in the NBA. So for me, it's Kobe's generation. Kobe was the best player of this era. I won't really debate that with anybody because, to me, it's kind of a no-brainer. But that's not a knock on Tim Duncan. Like, you're number 2 to one of the most marketable players that we have seen in our lifetime. And marketability has a lot to do with it. It has a lot to do with it. So when you consider everything that Kobe has done for the game of basketball, it's going to stand out more because of the style that he plays compared to the style of what Tim Duncan plays, I guess is what I'm trying to say. In that regard, give the nod to Kobe Bryant. It was his era.
And that's fair. And as Jordan just mentioned, it's totally not a knock against Duncan in any way because he's an all-time great. And as Jameson mentioned, comparisons of this nature aren't necessarily the fairest. It's actually part of why I don't like comparing, like, you know, different eras, you know, let alone different players. Because, you know, greatness is greatness, and it should be recognized. So hats off and respect and true appreciation to Tim Duncan for his, you know, 19-year career. I look forward to seeing and hearing what he's got for us in terms of the Hall of Fame speech. I'm actually hoping he surprises us and does a heel turn and gives us some Jordan-like, you know, Jordan-like fire, just because it would be the craziest thing of all time. Even though that's not going to happen, it would be fun. All right, let's go ahead and bring it back. Bring it back to the way things are going now. Kevin Durant's decision to leave the Thunder and join the Golden State Warriors obviously sent some shockwaves throughout the NBA universe for all of the obvious reasons. We talked about this all year and even discussed, you know, this specific scenario as a possibility. But after the run the Thunder had, you know, even managing to get up 3-1 on the eventual Western Conference champs before falling, do either of you have an issue with the decision to link up with a team that just won 73 games and actually knocked them out of the playoffs?
I don't have an issue with it at all because, one, he's a free agent. It's one thing if he would have forced a trade there and say, hey, I only want to go to Golden State, make it happen. If he would have did that, then I could see where the outrage would come from and whatnot. But the way the rules are now, the way the salaries are, and the way Golden State situation is set up where they have a lot of guys that aren't on huge max contracts, they got guys that are making like less than $20 million a year, so they have the opportunity to move a couple of deals and fit his right in there. Hey, they made it work. Everything was legal. People are just very saddened because you have a top 3 player or 2 player or the best player in the league. Wherever you want to put Kevin Durant at, he's definitely a top 5 player in the world at the lowest numbers, definitely top 5, but he's definitely higher, in my opinion. Whenever you have that guy during a team that just won 73 games, it was like maybe 2 minutes away from winning a championship. And when he's joining that team, of course, there's going to be a lot of people who don't like it. But as a free agent, you're able to do whatever you want. So I don't mind the situation at all. For the Warriors, you got to love it because, one, you get Kevin Durant, and, two, you didn't have to overpay for Harrison Barnes. Like, that's the thing people aren't understanding. It's one thing to get Kevin Durant. It's another thing to have Harrison Barnes, who on some nights is their 7th or 8th best player on that team, be the highest paid guy and never holding his weight. That would have been – I think that would have been an interesting thing going into the next season, if Harrison Barnes was a starter next year, making $22 million a year, $23 million a year, I think that would have been a bigger story than all this other stuff that's been going on, because when you have a guy like that that's so inconsistent and he's the highest paid player, that doesn't bode well for the three other all-stars in that locker room that are well underpaid for what they do, you know, due to the whole CBA situation. So the Warriors won here, Kevin Durant won here. Also, don't discount the fact that Roc Nation and also Nike wanted him in bigger markets. Plain and simple, however you want to slice it up, they wanted him in bigger markets. Yes, you can do your stuff in smaller markets, but the people who call the shots, those big corporations, they want their guys in big markets. They want their guys in super-duper markets. And, yes, the Bay Area is a huge market. You have a lot of Silicon Valley money. You have a lot of people that have app money. You have a lot of people who have money there. You have a lot of opportunities there, a lot of people there. And there's other stuff than just basketball that made this decision for Kevin Durant. I would say primarily the basketball decision, but there's other things involved that went with it. All in all, I think it's a good decision for him on and off the court. And as long as he stays healthy and that court stays healthy, I don't see how they lose going forward.
Yeah, don't be angry at Kevin Durant. Be angry at the current landscape of the NBA. That's just the bottom line. Kevin Durant he's making more money this year than he did last year. If off the top of my head, if I remember correctly, I believe it's even a pay increase for him. He's going to Golden State, where things are going to be a lot easier for him. So he took an easier job. Don't be mad at Kevin Durant for that. A lot of people were upset about LeBron James, and that was a hot topic on my show throughout last week. Why are we angry at LeBron James, but we're not angry at Kevin Durant? You got to remember, LeBron James was the first one to do it. He was the first one at the height of his career to bolt. So, and then on top of that, he also did it on national television, and then he had a WWE-type entrance where he guaranteed 5, 6, 7 championships, and he said it was going to be easy, it wasn't even going to be fair. So that's why LeBron disagrees. Do not be mad at Kevin Durant for this. The way I view the current NBA landscape, like from a players and owner standpoint, it's almost like it's an us versus them deal. Us being the players, them being the owners. Where back in the day, you had guys like Larry Bird and Charles Barkley who have been very vocal about their opinion on what Kevin Durant has done. It seems now there's a fraternity. We've talked about this. There's a fraternity. You have the players' union, which is a lot more vocal. And because of that, you have players teaming up and looking to get the most money that they possibly can. That's why you're seeing these two-year deals with one-year opt-out clauses. So for Kevin Durant to join up, you know, with three or four guys that beat him in the conference finals, yeah, I'm sure it looks insane for somebody like Larry Bird or somebody like Charles Barkley. Let's not forget that Kevin Durant will make more in 1 year than Magic Johnson did his entire career playing for the Los Angeles Lakers. Different game. It's a different landscape. If you want to be mad at somebody, be mad at the current collective bargaining agreement. Be mad at the current landscape of the game. Don't be mad at Kevin Durant for quote-unquote taking the easy way out when he's going to make more money. There's going to be less wear and tear on his body. There's less pressure. And if the rumors that we hear are true about playing with Russell Westbrook, which I have no reason to doubt that they aren't true, he's going to play with a very pass-friendly, system-oriented team in Golden State that has proven to have success. Don't be mad at that guy. Be mad at the landscape of the league.
You know, the one thing I'll say is Barkley and those cats, well, Barkley in particular, he can stop with all that uproar and outrage, because realistically the same could be said about him during his playing career, having forced his way out of Philly during his prime in order to get to a Western Conference contender in the Phoenix Suns, and then doing the same exact thing once he was unable to get over the mountain with the Suns, and trying to latch on with the back-to-back champion, Houston Rockets, just a few years later. Now, I'm saying all of this not in order to go at Barkley. I'm just being real, because Barkley was one of my favorite players of all time. So this is not a personal thing. I'm just being real. Durant gave 9 years of his blood, sweat, and tears. I know it's cliche, but literally his blood, sweat, and tears to that community in OKC. I get why OKC fans are a bit heartbroken and naturally upset, so I'm not faulting the fans necessarily for their reaction, but I absolutely cannot fault Durant for picking the option he saw best as his personal choice. On the flip side, I will say, I do get the complaints about the move from a basketball competition perspective. But again, that's not the fault of the players. That's the current landscape. And I'm certainly not going to fault players that, you know, for finally exercising their rights when it comes to their careers. All right. Another few, because I definitely want to get to, you know, there's so much that is taking place. And, of course, we're going to be talking about this, you know, as I mentioned earlier and as I'll probably mention again later on. We'll be talking about all of these different scenarios that took place, so, you know, that unfolded over the last couple of weeks over the course of the summer. You know, we do have a long summer ahead of us. But Dwayne Wade, you know, he also had a change of locations. Obviously, he took things back to his hometown, Chicago Bulls. Jameson, while it was a difficult decision, I personally can't really fault the Heat for not breaking in this negotiation, even though it resulted in Wade moving on. What did you think about the way that all played out?
I actually loved it from Dwayne Wade. Dwayne Wade has been the face of Miami sports since he's been in Miami since 2003. From 2003 to now, he's been the face of Miami sports from a great rookie year to winning, bringing Miami Heat their first championship, to, you know, bringing LeBron and Bosh aboard in 2010, and from having a really good season this past year. He's been the face of that franchise and the best athlete in that city for a very long time. And they've consistently treated him poorly. Now, I understand sports is a business. I get that. And his body is breaking down. You know, he doesn't have a whole lot left body-wise. You know that body's not going to be 100% going forward. But you cannot preach loyalty. You cannot preach loyalty and family and all that stuff the Miami Heat and Pat Riley do, and then turn around and treat the guy that will probably have a statue in front of that building one day like complete garbage over and over again. That just can't happen. Now, I understand that he has missed a lot of games in the past and he has not been himself in a lot of situations, but you got to take, especially with the Caps blowing up, you got to take care of your guys, man. You can't, you cannot pay Goran Dragic $17, $18 million a year, Hassan Whiteside for $20 million, and then when it comes to Wayne, you offer him $10 million at the jump. Nah, as a man, you have to stand for something. As a grown man, as someone that's a proud individual, you have to be able to stand for something. If you're not going to be able to stand for that, then you've got to make different moves, and that's what he did. And I actually like that. I'm kind of saddened that the Heat didn't fork over extra money. They could have found that extra $5 million to make it work. But when you insult someone's intelligence and their value, of course they're going to make something different work, and that's what they did. I don't blame one bit for making it happen. I'm actually happy that did take place. Because, you know, owners have to understand that loyalty is a two-way street. And if you don't show it, then people will make other moves. So I'm happy for D-Wade. I think Chicago, they're not rebuilding anymore. They were on pace, on track to rebuild. Now they're not a contender, but they have a playoff team on paper. So they're in better shape. The Miami Heat are probably going to be in the lottery next year.
Really? You think they're going to, like, is that contingent upon whether Boss plays or not?
I mean, look here. Goran Dragic is okay. I don't trust Hassan Whiteside one bit. I'm sorry. I just don't. And you give him almost $100 million, and he's had a good year and a half, and he's a little bit injury-prone. I just don't trust him to be the face of the franchise type of guy. And with the Boss situation, it's something to keep an eye on, because if he hasn't been able to play for a year and change now, and he's been wanting to play and the organization doesn't, something's going on that we don't quite know about. There's something there that we just don't know just yet that will eventually come out, but we don't know it yet. He, remember, he was angling to play from, like, all-star break all the way on. He was angling to play. He was trying to practice all this and that. They said, no, what are they trying to do? Are they trying to get out of that contract? Are they trying to make a move to, you know, make sure they have enough cap space for the next summer free agents? I'm very, very interested to see how that situation goes. I don't think he plays with them next year. I don't think Chris Bosh is on that team next year. So with that being said, with the guys they lost and the guys they have replacing them, I'm not a big Justice Winslow guy. There's some ability there. I'm not high on him. I like Richardson a little bit, but they have a roster in the East that's getting better. Remember, the East has gotten a lot better since the playoffs ended. I don't know if they're a playoff team. I don't think they make playoffs this upcoming year.
That is fair, and I'm just going to put this out there. There's really nothing to really discuss about it right now, but just remember that I said this. I think they are trying to get out of that contract, and I think that Pat Riley sees Russell Westbrook on the horizon next summer, and I think that's who he wants. Jordan, now that Dwayne Wade is in Chicago, what can we expect out of a team that, you know, led by, you know, if we're being honest, an intriguing mix of Wade, Jimmy Butler, and Rajon Rondo?
It's the worst shooting backcourt that we've probably seen in the past 20 years. I don't know on this roster the way it stands right now, and I'm being serious. outside of McDermott and Mirotić, they don't have a single individual that can consistently knock down a 17-foot jump shot. Who's going to do that on this team? Mm. If you look at the three-point percentage of this backcourt last year, Rondo's never had an outside shot. Dwayne Wade was horrible from the perimeter last year. I believe he shot 15%, if I remember right, from downtown last season. It's a very odd mix. I don't know that the Chicago Bulls got drastically better from last season. Maybe marginally better. I think maybe this is a team that can compete for anywhere. You know, maybe they can compete for a 6-5 seed top in the East. And you say, well, they didn't make playoffs last year. Yeah, but they had a lot of injuries that kind of contributed to that. Like, they had a top-8 roster going into the offseason. I don't know if they got any better. Like, this is a really weird mix. And there was also a tweet today that I ran across that said there was actually an offer on the table, a potential trade, that would have sent Jimmy Butler to the Jazz. Now, I have not been able to confirm the tweet, but to me it would have made more sense.
Just to clarify, because I did see that tweet as well, that was a part of a discussion, a hypothetical discussion that Steve Kyler of Basketball Insiders was having with some other guys, and folks jumped on that and thought that it was real. It actually wasn't.
Even if it was, it would have made more sense than what they have right now, is what I'm saying. Like, this backcourt to me, it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't fit together. I look at what the Chicago Bulls have right now, and I scratch my head. It's a PR move to sign Dwayne Wade. And maybe at this point in time in his career, that's all it was going to be, regardless of where he goes, unless he went to a team like Cleveland that was rumored there for a while. It just didn't make sense. It looks as if something is missing from the Chicago Bulls puzzle, like a trade. That's where I was getting at with that particular deal. Like, there's something that's missing from this team. This is an incomplete roster, and in the backcourt, it's going to look very, very strange. I'm actually really excited to watch the Chicago Bulls just to see how this pans out because, again, this is one of the worst shooting backcourts in the NBA, and it's one of the worst statistically that we have seen in a very long time.
Jordan, sticking with you, any chance, and I know, you know, look, the guy just won a title that, you know, that we just, you know, finished the rumors about it, but I have to throw it out there because I can see it coming up, especially if things don't necessarily start off well with Chicago. You got players that are injured, the fit doesn't work, as you mentioned, and I agree with, they're currently constructed without a lot of shooters. Any chance we hear Wade's name in trade rumors by the deadline if the situation with Love remains the same in Cleveland?
Absolutely, because, again, it's a PR move for Chicago at this point, which, you know, and let's be honest, I hate to compare the Kobe Los Angeles situation to a potential Dwayne Wade Miami situation, because we all understand why the Lakers had to sign Kobe Bryant to a 2-year, $48 million deal, TV contract that they had to sign Warner Cable. Completely different scenario. When you look at the Miami Heat and where this team was going, Dwayne Wade is going to sell you tickets, because, again, as far as Miami sports figures go, that guy is top three all time. You put him up there with Dan Marino. Yeah. You put him up there with Don Shula. There's Dwayne Wade. Like, he's really that – he means that much to that area. In Chicago, it's a good story. Remember, he flirted with the idea of going to Chicago back in 2010 during the offseason when LeBron came to Miami. So I think it's a good story. I think it's a PR move. PR moves don't necessarily win basketball games. Again, like I said, there's just something missing with this Bulls team. It would not shock me one bit if we see a trade at some point in time in the next season, because Rondo with the Wade and Butler, it just doesn't make sense to me. So, yes, I believe when the Chicago Bulls are floating around the 500 barrier, around the trade deadline, they may even be below the 500 barrier at the trade deadline, I believe that you're going to see a lot of trade rumors pop up. And there's a good, you know, I'll put it this way. Dwayne Wade will not finish his career at Chicago Bulls. I will be very, very surprised if the Chicago Bulls jersey that he puts on opening night is the last jersey that he wears during his NBA career. I just don't see it happening.
Fair enough. And we'll definitely, as you mentioned, we'll definitely keep an eye on that. All right, let's keep things going here. Let's switch things over to the New York Knicks for a few minutes. The Knicks look to be in a situation where they're definitely swinging for the fences with the additions of Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, Courtney Lee, and even Brandon Jennings, obviously to go along with Melo and Porzingis in year two. I know that there were some that were a little bit more cynical about the moves, but I'm on the boat, you know, now, you know, having seen how it all shaped up. of folks, I guess, with at least a bit of excitement to see how this group, how good this group can be. Of course, if they're able to stay even relatively healthy this year. What do you guys think about the work Phil Jackson has done so far this summer?
Well, he's made a bad situation pretty halfway decent, I guess you could say. I like the Courtney Lee signing a lot. I'm not too big on Rose or Noah at this stage of their careers, just based off, how their bodies are, the injury history there and the injury risk. But in terms of, getting something out of nothing, and what they gave up for Rose was pretty much nothing. They didn't really give up much for him. And if Derrick Rose has a comeback season, then you benefit from that. If he has a bad year, you get rid of him. So they really didn't give up much. It's one of those boomer bust type of deals. I don't mind it at all. You still have Carmelo there who can still play. I like the guys they got. I do. I think they can be okay. I don't think they're going to be a contender or anything. I think they can be decent. I think they can be a 40, mid-40, maybe high 40 win team in the East. I think that's achievable. But with that being said, it makes things very interesting going forward, because if you have a good year this year with this team, do you start buying the false hope that that core is really good going forward, or do you cut bait and try to get other guys? So it creates a good situation for the short term, but long term makes you ask a lot of questions. I don't know what's going to happen or what their mindset is, but I like the names that they got. I'm just not really sold on them. I'm not really sold on this roster being a huge contender, but for where they're at the end of April to where they are now, it's a huge improvement. And I like Brandon Jennings on a better, pretty much a vet minimum deal now, 1 year, $5 million. I like that because he's a guy with a little bit of flair. He will get the fan base involved. He'll have a couple of nice plays here and there every night that will, get people out there to see it in the Garden. So it's a good fit. They need a couple more guys off the bench. But for right now, I think for the situation, it's probably the best possible thing they could have done, regarding their situation.
Jordan, how competitive can this team be against the likes of the Cavs and the Raptors in a playoff series? I know it's way early to talk about that, but that's why you make deals like this. So that it's obvious they're going for it. How competitive can they be?
No, they can't be competitive against Cleveland. I still don't think any. Look, I was one of the only individuals that was really high on Toronto last year. Yeah, they took Cleveland 6 games, but it wasn't a competitive 6 games. That may sound weird, but I mean, if you watch that series, it wasn't a competitive 6 games. No, even when the series was 2-2, I don't think anybody was giving Toronto a chance in that series. Can they contend with Toronto? Yeah, if the cards fall right. I mean, there's a lot of health questions with New York. First off, I think it's a new starting point for Derrick Rose. You're the guy that was dealing with the pressure of the city of Chicago. And again, there was a lot of pressure building because he won an MVP. Chicago was the second best team behind Miami for a few years, and they took Miami. They really, really gave Miami some problems, and that was a fun rivalry that was starting to develop. And then the wheels just started to fall off. So you had a lot of pressure riding on somebody like Derrick Rose, who just couldn't stay healthy. Fresh start, lower expectations in New York. Carmelo Anthony finally has some help. A lot of it is going to fall on him, the development of Kristaps Porzingis. I don't see why they can't contend with a team like Toronto, but are they even in the same realm as Cleveland? No, they're not, because Cleveland still has LeBron James, the best player in the world, and there's nothing on this team that tells me that they can neutralize or at least somewhat contain LeBron in a 7-game set. So if we're talking about an Eastern Conference championship for New York, absolutely not. This is a team that can contend for home court in the first round.
I know it's cliche, and I know especially fans from other markets don't necessarily like to hear this, but it is true from both a business perspective as well as just an overall interest in the league. If the league is a better place, not necessarily when the Knicks and Lakers and Celtics are on top, but at least when they're relevant. And I just appreciate that that's where we're headed with all of those, with all of those situations, obviously with the Lakers finally embracing a full-on rebuild. But even them, they're going to be extremely exciting to watch over these next few years. And when it comes to the Knicks, while they may not necessarily be, finals contenders, I am looking forward to them, and I do hope that they can stay, just relatively healthy enough to see them compete in the next, in this next season. Okay, let's get a quick reaction from each of you on these next few and keep them rolling so we can get to a few more topics here before we wrap up. Harrison Barnes, terrible finals and subpar playoffs, run in general aside, still wound up getting a 4-year, $94 million deal from the Mavericks. and absolutely good for him. I suppose if you're Dallas, you'd rather pay him that type of money rather than essentially the same money for Parsons, because that's what he ended up getting from the Grizzlies, especially given that recent history of knee issues, and not to mention the fact that Barnes is, if I'm not mistaken, a few years younger as well. What do you guys think about that deal?
I'm not a big fan of it, but I understand the Mavs had to get someone. They had to put that money into some area, some use. If you're the Mavs, you're hoping that Harrison Barnes at 20, I believe he's 23, you hope that he has a little bit of potential that he hasn't tapped into yet. I don't think that's going to be the case, but if you're the Mavs, you're thinking, all right, well, we'll take a chance here. Works out great. If not, it's always a dealable contract somehow, some way, because of the way the cap is right now. So it's one of those things where you kind of just take a chance and hope it works out.
Don't hate the deal. I think Jameson hits it right on the head. Dallas improved this offseason. How much did they improve? That I don't know. I also view the Harrison Barnes deal kind of working hand-in-hand with getting Andrew Bogut as well. I'm a big Andrew Bogut guy. I like what he can bring to the team. So you kind of have to evaluate this deal by accepting both of those players. Dallas got better. They gave up nothing to get Harrison Barnes and Andrew Bogut. There's a lot of teams out there who would gladly take on Andrew Bogut's expiring contract and Harrison Barnes at what Dallas paid for him. A lot of GMs that wish they were in that situation as well. I think Dallas did good here. You may not like it dollars-wise. I'm not paying attention to dollars right now because according to what we know, the cap is going to spike even more next season. So based on everything that we have in front of us, Andrew Bogut and Harrison Barnes for nothing, I'll take that all day.
All right. Dwight Howard got a 3-year, $71 million deal from the Hawks, and while everyone likes to snicker whenever his name comes up, I actually think it could be a perfect fit for both sides, or I should specify, as perfect a fit as you're going to find for Howard. What were your guys' thoughts on that addition?
I actually love the deal because, one, Dwight can still play. He's not an elite center anymore. He's not that superstar guy anymore, but he can still play. Now, I think the best situation for Dwight is finally out of the limelight. He's finally out of a high-profile, high-pressure situation. Being in Atlanta, being back at home, you don't have to worry about a bunch of TV cameras there. You don't have to worry about being asked a bunch of questions about things. You can just concentrate really on basketball and your personal life. And that's the thing he hasn't been able to do for a very long time. Even though the latter part in Orlando, it got kind of hectic because of the situation that was going on between him and the front office and the coach. It's been probably about 4 or 5 years since he's had a regular season that was just a regular situation with not a whole lot of drama or craziness to it. So this should be a breath of fresh air for him. I think he helps Atlanta. I think Al Horford's a better overall player, but what Dwight gives you defensively is a lot more than having two guys at 6'8", or one guy at 6'8", another guy at 6'9", as your front court being able to block shots. Having Dwight being able to be your defensive backbone in a system like Atlanta is a way better situation for them going forward because, look here, when you're in the East, you know who you got to go through. And when your power forward and center is the same size as the guy you got to go through, you're not going to win that battle. It's just not going to happen. So I like Atlanta changing it up. As good as Horford was, is, I think they made the best decision possible, especially with Millsap there. So I like it a lot. And I also think if Dwight's healthy, I think you may see a guy that starts an All-Star game again.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. Again, I think Jameson hits it right on the head. I don't feel sorry for Dwight Howard, one iota. Everything that Dwight Howard has and all the criticism that he has had to endure over the past, 5 seasons, he's done it to himself. He had a great situation in Orlando. He wasn't happy. He tried to force himself to a larger market in Brooklyn. The deal couldn't get done. He ended up in L.A. That was a nightmare. Then he got to pick his poison where he wanted to play. He thought he would go to Houston. He thought that Daryl Morey, the self-proclaimed genius, would develop some sort of championship pedigree, and he would get what he was looking for. It didn't work there. And again, when you were the man and you create the circus hype around you that you have created going back to your days in Orlando, you get the grunt of the blame, and that's what happened in Houston. It's a good move for him to go back to Atlanta. It's a nice story. The expectations are going to be extremely low. And I'm also really curious to see what Coach Bud could do with him. I love Coach Budenholzer. I think it's a great fit for Dwight in Atlanta. Maybe this is a sign of Dwight maturing in a sense to where he knows what kind of player he is and he knows where he needs to go. Not necessarily to compete for a title, but where he can go and be Dwight. If that's the Dwight of old, the Dwight that continues to develop a circus around him, I highly doubt. I think he's past that time in his career. I think he's mentally fatigued. And the best place to go when you're mentally fatigued is a place like Atlanta, not a place like New York, which I thought would make a strong push to get Dwight, especially after after the D. Rose trade. That would have been a terrible situation for Dwight Howard. I'm glad that he went to Atlanta.
Speaking of a guy that Dwight actually replaces, Al Horford got 4 years and $113 million, if I'm not mistaken, from the Celtics, which was another situation where I just feel it's a good fit. How are you two guys feeling about the Celtics and their chances with Horford in the mix?
It helps them because they have a guy that's a legitimate all-star, a guy that's not going to be an all-star just for 1 year like Isaiah Thomas was. You know, Horford's going to be a consistent all-star caliber player for a while. So that's it's a good fit. You know, like Jordan says, you got to kind of throw the money out of the pitcher a little bit. You kind of want to think of ideal fit if the guy's healthy. I think that's the best way to think of the situation. The money is outrageous this summer. It just is what it is. But the fit is pretty solid. You got a pros pro in Al Horford. Got a lot of young guys. He's going to buy into a system. It works for them. My thing is Al Horford's also a guy that gets hurt a lot. He's a guy that has injury history, injury issues. And to pretty much tie him up for 4 years at that kind of dollar amount is a bit concerning. But for the short term, I think it's a good situation. They're a team on the rise with a lot of assets. They're going to try to make things happen. He helps them because he's one less piece away from being a really good contender, but at the same time, there's still a couple pieces away from being a legit contender. But he definitely helps the situation, and I like the move. I do like them bringing him along.
Yeah, he helps Boston tremendously. I think this is a team that can compete with the likes of Cleveland. I think they are better than Toronto based on the current roster that they have. I'm all for the move. And also, again, going back to a coach, Brad Stevens is one of my three favorite coaches right now in the NBA. I'm fascinated with his X's and O's and his ability to lead a team. This is a team that you've seen evolve. I love the veteran move to bring in somebody like Horford who will give you an immediate impact down low. I think it's a great match for Boston. I think Boston right now is maybe a player away from actually really pushing Cleveland for the Eastern Conference crown. Step in the right direction. Danny Ainge, tremendous GM. Seems like Boston is always competing. If you're a Celtics fan, you have to smile. One of the more underrated moves of the offseason. And I say it's underrated because where basketball enthusiasts are well in tune with what Al Horford can do, you know, casual fans don't really know what Horford brings to the table because Atlanta is not a team that you get to watch often. So I think it's somewhat underrated when you talk to casual fans of the NBA. I think Boston did great this offseason.
All right, Mike Conley got 5 years and $153 million in order to be the highest-paid player in NBA history to stick around with the Grizzlies. What do you guys think about the new direction they seem to be going in Memphis with a team that's clearly going to be centered around Conley, now Parsons, and obviously Marc Gasol when he returns to full strength?
Man, it's a lot of money to put into a team that may not see the second weekend in May. To be honest with you, I like Mike Conley. I like him a lot. Pay him over $30 million a year for the next 5 years, fully guaranteed, I have a problem with that. I'm sorry, I do. Mike Conley may never make an all-star team, but he's going to be the highest-paid player in the league. I have a huge issue with that. And their team, Marc Gasol's injury history is kind of getting up there. It's kind of getting scary. He's a big that's getting a lot of injuries piling up recently. That's not a good sign. That's not a sign you want to see going forward into a guy that you've invested money into as well. We already know about Chandler Parsons' knees. We know about those situations. I'm not following the Grizzlies at all. I think if things turn out right, you know what? I'll do one better. If things turn out all the way right, they can be the second team in the West. They can be the second best team in the West. If things don't turn out well, they can be out the playoffs just based off injuries and guys not playing up to par and whatnot. Like, that's the kind of wild swing they have. I'm just really not sold on the guys they signed and the amount of money they did. Chandler Parsons is a nice player. He's a nice complimentary player. But a guy that's going to be going on 28 with the knee injuries he has, I have to be very, very careful about that. And Mike Conley, again, he's making $30 million for the next 5 years. And I don't think he's going to get better as that contract goes along. I don't see him improving and taking a next step as a player as that goes along. So as that happens, as a team that doesn't help you, and Zach Randolph and Tony Allen are getting older as well, if they're going to have a good year, it has to be this year, because as things keep on going forward and forward, they're going to get worse and worse. But they have a competitive team. I just don't like the situation they're going into at all. I don't like it. It's a lot of names. It's another high risk, And I don't know if their award is so high, because I don't think they're better than the Warriors. I know they're not better than the Warriors. I don't know if they're better than the Clippers or the Spurs right now. So I don't know how high the reward actually is for all the money they spent.
First off, the only people that act like they're happy with the Mike Conley deal are Memphis Grizzlies. And Mike Conley went from being the most underrated point guard in the NBA, being the most overrated point guard in the NBA, with the action of one signature on a piece of paper. I like Mike Conley. I've gone to bat for Mike Conley for a very long time. Never in a million years have I ever thought that we would have a conversation where Mike Conley's contract would be in the same category as Kobe Bryant's or Michael Jordan. Let that fester for a second. He's not worth that money. And you can say, well, look, a lot of players aren't worth the money that they signed for. Correct. But you just gave Mike Conley the richest contract in NBA history. No, he's not worth that kind of money. Then you tack on Chandler Parsons. Again, this is a guy that we knew was going to get paid. Part of the reason why he's no longer in Dallas, they knew he was going to get paid. Dallas seeing Harrison Barnes as an upgrade over Chandler Parsons. I'm not a huge fan of what Memphis has done. Jameson, I can do you one better. If all things go right, they maybe have home court in the first round. If all things go right, they're the fourth best team in the Western Conference.
All right, and, you know, of course, I just want to remind you, we'll be discussing a lot more of these deals and new directions, you know, from across the league throughout the summer, as I mentioned. You know, definitely looking forward to some of the guests that we've got lined up. I haven't even talked to these guys about all of them, so, you know, we'll get to the rest. But before we run out of time today, I want to talk a little bit about the Los Angeles Lakers. Folks have already heard a ton about the Mozgov signing, and while, you know, I don't personally have an issue with it, given the huge void they have at the position, I do understand why the amount of money and the timing of the deal caught some folks off guard, especially given the fact that the organization has been talking about huge names in summer 16 more than Drake over the past 12 months. They also went ahead and brought in Luol Deng and Jose Calderon. Obviously, to go along with new rookies Brandon Ingram and Ivica Zubac. I actually got it right. Thank you. I'm sure you guys have been checking out summer league action as well. What are your guys' thoughts on this much-anticipated summer and how it's gone for the Lakers?
Well, the one thing I've noticed from this summer compared to last two is just that the team's more freer. Like, they're playing basketball. They're not worried about making mistakes. They're just playing. They're just out there running up and down. It's not, all right, we got to run this play five times in a row or anything like that. There's not a lot of structure set into it. There's a lot of good motion still there. Still, obviously, a lot of work in progress. But you can see, hey, these guys are out there just playing. They're not overthinking it. And it all starts with D'Angelo Russell. D'Angelo Russell looks like a new player. Looks like a guy that has a new lease on life, as crazy as that sounds. As good of a player as he is and as good as the talent and skill set he has, last year you can tell that his confidence was shaken a bit because the coaching wasn't all the way supportive of him. And, of course, you know, being a rookie, making that transition from Ohio State to the NBA is a tough transition for a point guard that wasn't all the way ready to make that transition body-wise, maturity-wise, and also skill set-wise at times. But going into this year, you can tell that, hey, it seems like the coaching staff has full confidence in his abilities and his play right now, and it shows. And for him to hit a shot like he did on Saturday night, I know it's just summer league, and summer league doesn't mean much, but for him to hit a shot like that is pretty cool to see, because we would have missed it, we would have heard all about it. It's pretty cool to see. Mm-hmm. Of course, maturity-wise, we know there's some things he needs to improve upon after the shot he, you know, said some things should have said. But I like what I see out of him. I like Ingram, even though Ingram didn't have a great game on Saturday. I like what I saw out of him. He's aggressive. He's a guy that he likes to get to his spots and does, you know, he does what he does. I'm waiting to see on a lot of other guys. You know, Zubac had a really good first game, had a lot of blocks, and he looked pretty polished on the offensive end. For a second rounder, he looks like a keeper. Like, for a guy they drafted at 32 or 33, he looks like a guy that's going to be on the roster. Like, he doesn't look like a guy that might not make it. He looks like a guy that can be on the opening night roster, which is a great thing, drafting a guy in the second round, especially an international guy. But this, the whole overall mood of the team, I was at the last two summer leagues, last actually four summer leagues, the last two with the Lakers were really rough because you saw the faces, you saw the mood of the team, and this was there. Like, they were really depressed. Last year was really bad. They were depressed. They had some names on there. It just didn't go as expected. But it was really like a cloud over that team last summer. This year, it's the complete opposite. Everybody's jumping up and down, guys getting off the bench, and of course, Larry Nance Jr., who's probably going to be pushing Julius Randle for a lot of minutes this year at that four spot. I don't know if they can play them at the same time, but Larry Nance Jr., who I watched at Wyoming for a bunch of years, keeps on getting better and better. If his knees are healthy, he's got to be pushing for playing time because he can, one, he's going to defend and rebound the hell out of the ball. And also, he's a guy that's going to make things happen on offense. So Julius Randle better be ready come training camp because there's, you know, Larry Nance is going to be on his heels for that spot.
Jordan, you know, I'm interested in your thoughts on the young guys, but I actually particularly I want to know your thoughts on the veteran group that they finally have brought in to surround some of these young guys in support of as well as in guidance. What do you think about Luol Deng working with these forwards and Mozgov working with being around the bigs and Calderon being in that backcourt? He's not I don't necessarily expect in particular with Calderon, I don't expect him to be on the court all that much, but in particular, in the practice and on the road, what type of impact do you think these guys can have on those young guys?
Well, I think the Luol Deng signing to me was absolutely fantastic. That's a locker room guy that the Lakers have coveted for a very long time, and they got their guy. I think that's someone that can definitely help evolve the game with somebody like Brandon Ingram. I do love the veterans that they have brought in. Mozgov, I think a lot of the reason why everybody shook their head on the Mozgov deal is because of the amount of money that they threw at Mozgov. This guy can play basketball. Yeah, Mozgov is healthy. He took that back injury-wise this past season in Cleveland. Let's not forget this guy can play ball. I've watched Mozgov play before. Is he worthy of a $64 million contract? No, but then again, as we have mentioned several times in the past hour, you have to throw that clock out at this point in time. Jose Calderon, boy, you acquired another outside perimeter shooter. For next to nothing, and let's not forget you still have Lou Williams on the team as well. So the roster has gotten better. The saying that people hate here in the state of Utah, but it has been the saying coming from the front office for the last 3-4 years, is trust the process. Fans hate that because when you say trust the process, that means something is going on right now that you don't necessarily agree with. And you're not a competitive team as it states right now. However, trust the process is something that Laker fans need to embrace because D'Angelo Russell is going to be a pretty good point guard. If D'Angelo Russell is, in fact, the future of your backcourt, you get Jordan Clarkson on a very favorable deal. Julius Randle, another year. Let's see if he can develop into that double-double guy. Jameson brought up Larry Nance. I love Larry Nance. I love the way this guy has played throughout the summer league. And there's been some other guys that have had a lot of fun watching. I was really high on the signing of an undrafted free agent, Zach August. And it seems like he's developing a nice chemistry with Larry Nance as well. This has been the most intriguing Lakers summer league team in quite some time, and I believe they got something in Brandon Ingram as well. That kid can play ball, needs to add on a little weight. Again, the statistic that you can throw out, only 4 players, I believe, since 1999 have been drafted at the small forward position that weigh less than 200 pounds. That's a little alarming, but look, he's got the ability offensively, so I'm not really going to take too much into that particular stat. I like what the Lakers have. I think it's been a productive offseason. Plus, let me throw this out there as well. For all you Lakers fans, you got rid of Byron Scott. You get Luke Walton. You drafted Brandon Ingram, which means you kept that second overall pick. And before we know it, Nick Young is going to be off the roster. That's production. That's moving in the right direction. Nick Young, they cannot get rid of Nick Young soon enough. When that happens, it has been a productive offseason.
Yeah, no, I mean, anybody, expectations somewhat unrealistic, actually extremely unrealistic aside, it's been a great offseason for the Los Angeles Lakers so far. Yes, you didn't get the big name. You shouldn't have even really anticipated that. You didn't necessarily, for all of the reasons that you just broke down, it's been a very good offseason. I think it's going to be important to maintain perspective on these guys this season. A lot of us, we went into last year with, let's just say lofty hopes and dreams for them. This is not going to be, compete for the eighth seed, type team just yet. They won 17 games last year. So for perspective, while nobody likes to hear it, just like the fans in Utah don't like hearing trust the process, Laker fans hate to hear this. They're not, they're not winning north of 35 games or probably north of even 30 games. But say they won 27 or 30 or 32, that would be a tremendous improvement. So all I'm saying is let's not worry so much about the record this year if you're a Lakers fan, and I'm here in the market, so I probably hear it more than most. Just, I won't say trust the process, appreciate the youth movement. Embrace it because it's here. You've got a ton of you've got a ton to be excited about with all of these young faces and new players, and there's a lot of talent there, but just let the guys develop without, you know, saying, oh, well, D'Angelo has to be an all-star this year, and Julius has – Let's simply enjoy him. It's been a while since, as a Laker fan, you've been able to do that. And given everything else that's out on the landscape, I actually wrote about this for Basketball Insiders this past week. Given what they've done up there in Golden State and with some of these other super teams that are already set or loading up, you don't necessarily have to rush into things. That's all I'm saying. All right, guys, great show today. We went a little bit longer than usual, but, you know, given that, you know, how long it's been since we did one, you know, that's not necessarily all that surprising. Before we run out of time, let me get a final shot from you.
Man, you know, with the NBA season over, draft over, summer league going on, basketball never stops, and it really doesn't. I just, basketball's coming NFL-like, and it's to the point where summer league games are getting like 16,000 people, you know, which is crazy to think of. I think a lot of people get caught up in the comparisons and the numbers and the stats and whatnot. I think people just need to enjoy the game of basketball. You know, everyone gets caught up in who's better than this or who did this better or the PER this or, shoot percentage of that. You know what? Let's just appreciate all these players and appreciate the game itself because it's a really good game. It's an awesome game. Even with this year, you have an extended year because the Olympics are going to be on and it's pretty much going to be like a month between the last Olympic game and training camp. We should appreciate game for what it is. There's way too much bickering and way too much hatred for certain players, certain teams and whatnot going on in this league, in this game. We should appreciate it a lot more, especially at the pro level, because you know what? For all that goes on with this game right now, it's in the game of basketball and the sport, you know, the NBA is in a very good spot. It's in a very good place. And you don't hear about guys getting caught up in crazy stuff, crazy crimes or anything like that. You keep on getting new stars, new players coming up. You hear about all these different young guys and you hear about the established guys. It's a really good situation going forward. It's only going to get better. Of course, the money is a big thing right now that everyone's talking about. But the sport keeps growing and growing. Even though you don't have the competitive balance as everyone would like to see or the fans may like to see or whomever may want to see it, you still have a lot of good storylines in the league and the game keeps getting better and better. So I think people need to appreciate that more instead of always thinking of the storylines or thinking of comparisons or stats or random Elias Sports Bureau stats because it gets kind of out of hand sometimes on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. I think we always need to sit back and enjoy the game and watch this era for what it is. It's a very good era. There's not too many eras where you have guys, special athletes like LeBron James and Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, all these guys, Russell Westbrook, all these guys playing at great levels. Like, we don't have that often. This doesn't come around every day. So I think we should appreciate it a lot more. And also, take a look at these young guys. These young guys are going to be very, very special in this league.
I couldn't agree more. There's nothing really to even add to all of that. I absolutely agree. The only thing is that we know this, the advent and the rise of social media, that has certainly changed the way that we look at things, certainly changed the way that we view. But I agree with you. Sometimes it's simply time to appreciate the sport for what it is. And while not everybody may necessarily agree with the direction it's gone, I agree with you, Jameson. I think the league is in a very good place. I think it's very healthy, both from a business standpoint, very clearly, as well as from an entertainment value as well. So I'm grateful for what we have in the NBA. I'm glad we're getting this extended summer. It's going to make, you know, it's going to make things a little bit more, a little bit busier for us, you know, personally. But I'm glad to be blessed with it. Jordan, let me get yours.
My final shot, I'm going to go back to what we talked about earlier in the show, you know, talking about Tim Duncan and him walking away from the game of basketball. And, you know, we had a whole segment mm-hmm. where we were comparing Tim Duncan and Kobe Bryant, and that's going to be the talk for the next week. Because we said goodbye mm-hmm. to two legends. Let's remember one thing, and I think the way these two walked away is the best way to compare them. You can't. You really can't. Like, we can sit here and we can talk about how one guy dominated the era, you know, from a media standpoint or from a marketing standpoint. They both won 5 NBA championships. They both went up against each other for the better part of a decade. Kobe Bryant had a year-long fanfare. Kobe Bryant received, you know, admiration all around the NBA. Tim Duncan finished out his career, took a couple of months off, and then announced it quietly, and it broke today. So I think that's a perfect, almost like an analogy for the way these two guys played the game and how they embraced the game during their time. Kobe got the love and the fanfare from the media. Tim Duncan just went about his business. I think it's a perfect ending to a career, It's sad that we have to say goodbye to Erez. I mean, we've been doing it in baseball. David Ortiz's career is coming to an end. We just recently said goodbye to Derek Jeter. Peyton Manning just hung it up in the NFL. It's sad that this generation of athletes who have transcended sports, they are moving on. They're gone. And that right there is just it's sad, but at the same time, I love the way Tim Duncan said goodbye.
Absolutely agree. Great point, and we'll definitely end it with that. The way Kobe walked away was perfect for him and indicative of his career, and the way Duncan did was perfect for him in exactly his own way. And I certainly celebrate that too. All right, guys, absolutely fantastic show. Great to be back in the booth with each of you. For the listeners out there, like I mentioned, we'll be talking about some of the other signings and transactions over the course of the summer, as well as obviously some summer more summer league action in next week's episode, as well as moving forward these Olympics that we're going to have here kicking off within the next few weeks. For Jameson Welsh and Jordan Buscarini, I am Jabari Davis, and this has been another episode of your Triple Threat Podcast. We appreciate you tuning in and look forward to being here with you again next week.